Welcome to University Congregational Church, and good morning. This is still another of those happy mornings when we present new members of this church to all the rest of you. They come, as always, from a variety of religious backgrounds. We like that diversity because we think it gives us a great deal of additional strength. I'm going to call the names of couples or families or individuals. They will stand and face you so that you can associate their names and faces. And then we will say the covenant together. And we want to welcome them very warmly into this church. I begin with David and Joni Malone. And the Olson family, David and Cheryl, Natalie and Courtney. Natalie has plans to be married in this church in April. I just married a week or two ago Michael and Sophia Shee. Ron Stuckey needs no introduction, surely. He's been shaking the rafters in the bass section for a long time. Karen Wright. And there are two persons who could not be here today. Some of you know them, Dr. Harvey Tretbar and wife Julie. I would like to ask the entire congregation to stand now, please, and join us in the reading of our covenant. In the love of truth, and in the name and spirit of Jesus Christ, this church exists to serve those who believe that the Christian faith affords our clearest insight into the nature and will of God. Accepting that faith as our guide, we join one with another to worship and work so that peace, justice, and brotherhood may prevail in this world. Ladies and gentlemen, we all welcome you warmly. We look forward to a long and happy relationship of service to this church and happiness to be derived from it. So, welcome warmly as new members in the University Congregational Church. Thank you.
Good morning. The book of Proverbs was a kind of school text for the Jewish students. Our scripture reading for this morning is a selection of typical Proverbs. Walk with the wise and be wise. Mix with the stupid and be misled. A simple person believes every word that is spoken. A clever person understands the need for proof. Even a fool, if he holds his peace, is thought wise. Keep your mouth shut and show your good sense. Knowledge comes to the discerning mind. The wise ear listens to get knowledge.
This is a good day again, not only because we have happily received some new members, but the choir is back. The church year really begins on this particular Sunday. And we have another reason to rejoice. Our dear friend Charles Wiggins has decided that Florida is not the place for him. And he is back, and we are glad. Will you bow your heads, please, and join me in this prayer? We have rejoiced, eternal God, in the beauty of the week just ended. Thankful for the blue skies and cool nights, for the happiness we know in our homes and in the health of those we love. We are glad for the first light of mornings, for books to read and songs to lift our hearts, for the promise we see in children, for people falling in love, for the challenge of new beginnings, for all the simple and often unnoticed blessings of life. We are especially glad this day for those who have chosen to add their strength to ours in this church. Make us ever more worthy of their choice, and increase the spirit of friendship and service in this place, so that they will never have reason to doubt their decision. We lift up now this day of our lives unto you, hopeful that our stumbling good may find favor in your sight, and that the harm we cause through ignorance may be forgiven, through Christ our Lord, in whose sacred name we continue our prayer a moment more in silence. Lest I forget it at the close of the sermon, I would like to tell you that starting next Sunday, I want to begin a series of sermons about religion. Religion is the best thing in the world and the worst thing in the world. And I'd like to spend a little while this fall talking about why that is so. It isn't a very helpful thing to have someone say from a pulpit over and over, "Do the right thing, just be sure to do the right thing," as if everybody knows perfectly well what the right thing is and only needs to be told to do it. It isn't that simple. Our problem often is that we don't know what the right thing is. It's a futile kind of preaching that tells us over and over that all we have to do is do right, when there is so much sincere confusion as to what is right. I know this has to be true because people asking for advice and other people giving it has turned into big business. Sometimes when I'm driving alone, I pick up Dr. Joy Brown or Bruce Williams on talk radio, and I listen because I'm fascinated by the amazing number of dilemmas that drive people to call. "Tell me what I ought to do," they say, hopefully. And when they get an answer, which their own good sense should have told them before they called, they say, "Oh, thank you," as if they have just received a major revelation. It's certainly harder to make some decisions now than it was in times past. People lived by certain codes for centuries, and they simply referred their problem to the code, the way you might run something through a computer. When the code blinked back N-O, they knew they had a clear-cut choice between right and wrong. Now the codes themselves are questioned. Every other person poses as an expert with prescriptions for the good life, and ancient patterns of behavior and relationships are changed. People who liked having all the roads clearly labeled now get honestly confused about what the right road is. So why not just trust your conscience? Well, the problem with that is that one's conscience can be misinformed. Some of the most terrible crimes in history, from the murder of Christ to the massacre of whole races, were done in perfectly good conscience. Paul wasn't kidding when he said that in his savage arrest and murder of Christians, he was acting all the time in good conscience. But he found out later that his conscience had been badly trained and was not reliable. So what do we do when we have to make a decision and we're not sure which way to go, are there any homely signposts that might give some practical help? I'd like to suggest this morning 6 simple questions we can ask ourselves, beginning with this one. Perplexed about a question of right or wrong, ask yourself first, what does good common sense tell me? The Nebraska boy whose misfortune it was to be challenged last week by another boy to race motorcycles down a country road at 100 miles an hour, gambling at the intersections, said exactly the right thing. Don't be silly. Some things can be handled by the use of that kind of basic good sense. We can take the power out of many temptations by saying incredulously, "You've got to be kidding." If you've ever read Don Quixote, you know that that is how the silly excesses of medieval romanticism got finished off. Over and over, Cervantes' novel says about some absurd temptation, "This is silly." And stupidity in that novel is laughed out of existence far more effectively than any argument could have done. That can work for us as well. No one knew that better than Mark Twain. Point out, he told us over and over, point out the sheer absurdity of a proposal, and you deflate the proposer like nothing else. Our peers help us sometimes by reminding us what common sense demands. I've seen a boy with a behavior problem that drove his family, his teachers, and his friends out of their minds. They argued with him, begged, punished, all to no avail. And then one day, a girl for whom he had come to care says the magic words about his behavior, "Don't be silly." And all of a sudden, he wakes up after sleeping through all the shouts of home and school and church. That's when the fathers of sons feel a great debt of gratitude to the parents of smart daughters. The power of common sense, administered by a touch of affectionate humor, has probably put more people right than anything I know. And it's even better if we can learn to say, "Don't be silly," to ourselves before someone else has to say it. People have been pulled out of the wreckage of cars who knew perfectly well how silly it was to drink too much and drive too fast, but ignored what they knew. So that's one test question. What does common sense tell me? And if your life has been anything like mine, you've said to yourself more often than once, "How could I have been such a fool?" Because it isn't deliberate malice or cruelty that wrecks life so often for most of us, as it is just forgetting good common sense. When that test doesn't solve the problem, and you're still troubled with a question of right or wrong, try submitting it to the test of sportsmanship. The essence of sportsmanship is that in a game, we do not take for ourselves special favors which we deny to other players. Once we've accepted the rules, we abide by them. And that means in daily life that if we have a question about what to do, we ask whether if everybody acted on the same principle we are about to act on, it would go well for the rest of us. When we join a whispering campaign about someone, or treat with contempt a person of another race or color, is that how we want the game to be played? Half the evil in the world is simply cheating by people who want one set of rules for themselves and another set for everybody else. I like the free enterprise system and all the good things it has given me. But aren't you amazed sometimes to read how cleverly some of us take advantage of it? Sophisticated people know that there are ways of making money in our system that are legal but morally wrong. We know ways of taking advantage of the ignorant or the weak so that they never really quite know what happened to them. The question is, shall we play fairly or cheat, knowing that we are not likely to be caught? Isn't it an interesting dichotomy that a few men and women, a few, who would never violate the rules of bridge or hunting or golf, will, in the competition of the business world, justify deception and dishonesty on the grounds that otherwise they cannot survive? Is that argument really true, or do they mean that fair play would diminish their profits, which isn't the same as survival? So that's a second test, the test of simple sportsmanship. And here's a third. Troubled by the right or wrong of something, submit it to the test of your best self. None of us is a single self. Life would be much simpler if we only were. This is the point Robert Louis Stevenson makes in that underrated little short novel called Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. There is a passionate self reaching out hungrily for sensation, ministering to itself. There is a careless self taking whatever comes along without much discrimination, the excellent with the cheap, the vulgar with the fine. But there is also, in most of us, a self, and you know it, which sits above all the others. One not often called on to make a response. A self made up of all the best things we have heard and seen. It isn't always easy to find this better self, especially if one has buried it for a long time in order to justify a careless life. But if the search is honest, it can be found. And then, in the moment of weakness or wonder, we ask, what would my best self do? The fourth test is a scorcher. If you are perplexed over what the right thing is, ask yourself how you would feel about publicity. What if everyone knew what you were proposing to do? Strip away secrecy. Carry it into the open air, this conduct you are not sure about. Imagine family and friends knowing it. Picture it being talked about publicly when your name is mentioned and written into the story of your life for your children to read about later, would you still wonder what to do? A great American preacher, Phillips Brooks, said once, "It is an awful hour when the first necessity of hiding anything comes. The whole life is different thenceforth. When there are questions to be feared and eyes to be avoided and subjects which must not be touched, then the bloom of life is gone. Put off that day as long as possible. Put it off forever if you can." My dad and I were moving stones and old railroad ties around a cellar one day when I was about 9 or 10 years old. Every time we turned one over, all sorts of ugly, squirmy little things ran around blindly, trying to get back into the darkness. "They panic in the sunlight," my dad said. "Can't stand it." And then he said very matter-of-factly, as if he really weren't talking to me at all, "You know, it's not a bad idea to keep things out of your life that can't stand the light." Still another test is to carry your debate about what's right and what's wrong before some court of the ideal. I mean, if you greatly admire some person, ask yourself how your choice will look by her standards or his. If I had to spend a week in a place like Coney Island, I would be utterly miserable, and I know exactly why. It's because in my mind, by way of contrast, would be the image of a cabin by a waterfall in Colorado, or the stillness of a Minnesota lake, broken by the queer, wild laughter of a loon, or the thunder of surf on a stretch of lonely beach. The point is that I've known something so much better than Coney Island with its carnival atmosphere. And in the same way, I've known people so beautiful that if I remember to think of them, it helps me to decide between two ways. I know what they would do, or if not that, then I know what their love for me would have me do, and it helps. And finally, if everything else fails, try the test of imagining the future. If you choose this road and stay on it, where do you end up after a while? I sat in the car the other night waiting for Billy to come out of the grocery store and watched a couple of teenagers, a boy and a girl, talk and laugh on a bench not far from where I sat. They were both smoking in that self-conscious and defiant way teenagers often have. And when I looked at the girl, I suddenly saw another face, 50 years older, in a hospital bed, a woman dying a wretched death from emphysema. And when I looked at the boy, I kept seeing the emaciated face of my neighbor, who died a long, drawn-out, and miserable death from the same disease, caused in both cases by a decision made long, long ago to smoke, and then by the inability to break the habit. The boy and girl don't see people like that, because they die in nursing homes and hospitals out of the public eye. So they only laugh if you risk saying to them, "Do you have any idea where this choice could take you?" Because the future for them is next week. But everything has some consequence. Somebody said once that every person who picks up one end of a stick picks up the other end at the same time. When I was in St. Louis and used to visit parishioners at Barnes Hospital, I had occasion at times to walk through the ward where emphysema and lung patients were hooked up to oxygen tanks and made as comfortable as possible. I still remember the gray-faced, total stranger who reached out and caught my arm when he heard the nurse mention that I was a minister. He said, "Tell your children how we look in here. Tell them not to start smoking." Well, we've gotten the warning labels in the years since then, but I am still positive that if every junior high kid had to spend 30 minutes in that ward, it would do more to deter teenage smoking than all the warnings and all the sermons in the world. A writer now and then compares life to a game of chess with its moves and strategies and complications. But the most interesting way in which it is, maybe, is that once you've played your opening, you're not as free as you were. All sorts of options close once you've made a choice. Some of the great masters can say, "Soon after the game begins, you see, my friend, when you chose those first moves, you decided what the end would be." Now, if this sounds like a lecture to people under 20, it isn't meant to be, because most of us are still making decisions. No one can predict the exact moment, but the sobering truth is that if I travel too far down a certain road, I don't turn back. So the last question to ask ourselves always and honestly is, where is this road likely to end, and is that where I would want to be? 6 good questions it might help to remember. In all the important choices we make, eternal God, be with us in mercy and wisdom. Amen.